My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute. We want to get his reaction to the incident involving American sailors being taken into Iranian custody earlier this week, in addition to other foreign policy headlines. And Mr. Ambassador, thanks very much for being with us, as always.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
One of the things that was hanging over the president's State of the Union speech was the fact that as he gave the speech, and he didn't mention the fact at the time, that 10 American sailors who had been in patrol boats in the Persian Gulf were taken into custody by the Iranians. We later learned that through videos that they had been forced to put their hands on their head, on their knees, the female sailor to wear a hijab, and ultimately one of the sailors being forced on video to admit that the United States had been at fault. The good news, of course, is that the sailors have been released, but in responding to the incident on Wednesday, Secretary of State John Kerry offered this analysis.
I want to thank the Iranian authorities for their cooperation and quick response. These are always situations which, as everybody here knows, have an ability, if not properly guided, to get out of control. And I'm appreciative for the quick and appropriate response of the Iranian authorities. All indications suggest or tell us that our sailors were well taken care of, provided with blankets and food, and assisted with their return to the fleet earlier today.
So, Mr. Ambassador, as you look at this, is the administration right that smart diplomacy turned this into a relatively short incident that could have gotten a lot worse, or how do you see it?
Well, I think it's completely the opposite of what happened. And I'd say first, look, there's still a lot we don't know about this, in particular, how the ships were actually taken. There was no reason for the Iranians to bring them to Farsi Island, to take them off the ship, the two ships and so on. If they were inadvertently in Iranian territorial waters, the standard procedure is just to warn them off, make them identify themselves, and tell them to shove off back into international waters. I think that what really may have been at stake here was the boats themselves. I wouldn't be surprised if they contained sensing equipment, advanced communications equipment, that just as that naval base that the Iranians have on that island is an observation post for shipping in the Gulf, that our boats were observing the Iranians. So now, after 10, 12, 14 hours of being able to examine the boats and maybe taking material off them, we don't know that yet. The Iranians now have a much better sense of what our capabilities are on those riverine boats than they did before. So why did they release the American crewmen after 18 hours? Because they had everything they needed. They gained propaganda benefit inside Iran because this was depicted as aggressive Americans being stopped by the Revolutionary Guard and arrested and humiliated and whatnot. They gained propaganda value in the rest of the world because everybody says, oh, those wonderful Iranians releasing the people in less than a day. And they gained valuable intelligence. So the notion that somehow this was a victory for diplomacy is something that I think is believed only inside the White House and the State Department. The big picture, again, based on what we know, which is incomplete at this point, is this is another example of the pattern of provocative action on the part of the Iranian government, followed by appeasement on the part of the United States. We don't know what accounts for the sailors' conduct. We don't see anything that other than what the Iranians videotaped for propaganda purposes. But I tell you, I think the administration has simply confirmed to the Ayatollahs in Tehran that they can push us around and we'll enjoy it.
What's the long-term impact then? You just alluded to it at the end of your last response. Where do the Iranians go from here?
Well, I think having gotten away with this, it would be perfectly logical for them to take it up a notch and try an even more provocative action. I think it's a signal to perhaps adversaries in other parts of the world, in Russia, in China, among the terrorist groups, that if you can humiliate the United States in this kind of way and simply get a pat on the back from the American Secretary of State, it just reinforces the concern that I've had for quite some time, that our enemies around the world have calibrated this administration very carefully. Our enemies don't know who's going to win the November election really any better than we do. But they know one thing for sure. They've got Barack Obama in office for another year. And whatever steps they want to take to advance their agenda against the United States, this is the time to do it. So I'm very worried over the course of the next year that we're going to have a series of provocations in diverse parts of the world that the administration's simply not going to be able to handle.
Mr. Ambassador, you've obviously served at some of the highest diplomatic levels, ambassador to the United Nations. You've also been a high-ranking State Department official. What should have been our response?
Well, I called as soon as I heard about this seizing of these crew members. I said that Obama should mention it in his State of the Union. I would junk this nuclear weapons deal with Iran that we signed in Vienna last summer on the first day in office of the new president of the United States. But recognizing that it was Barack Obama who was going to give the State of the Union message, I would have said, at least if I were he, these people never should have been taken in the first place. They should be released immediately. And if you're worried about opponents of the deal who are still in Congress, you need to start worrying about me. And of course, that didn't happen. A lot of things weren't mentioned in the State of the Union, the attack in San Bernardino by ISIS-related terrorists and other things. The president, I think, was just all he wanted to do was get the people out with the minimum of fuss and save the nuclear deal. And I just think it's very important that Congress find out what, if anything, was compromised in terms of our sensitive intelligence gathering capabilities, weapon systems, communications on those boats that the Iranians had a day and a half to search.
You mentioned, Mr. Ambassador, what was and what wasn't in his State of the Union address. So when it came to the fight against radical Islam, a term, of course, that he suggests that not to use, he talked about how the threat against ISIS is real, but it's not one that threatens the existence of the United States. He also tried to distance the United States from the suggestions of Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and others about the right course to take on ISIS militarily, saying we've got a smarter approach. It's about coalition building and using diplomacy and all the other tools available to us. What did you make of his articulation of his foreign policy?
Well, this is actually a very important insight into what's wrong with the Obama administration foreign policy. It may be the case today that ISIS is not a existential threat to the United States, although I might note it's by definition an existential threat to the people that ISIS terrorists have killed because their existence has ended. And it is the principal responsibility of the federal government to protect American citizens from being killed by foreign adversaries. So while it may not be the country as a whole that's at risk, my minimum standard is this: no American should be killed by terrorism, and that should be the president's standard as well. But even beyond that, the job of the president is not simply to get up every morning and look around the world and say, well, they're not an existential threat today. Real statesmen look 5-10 years out, even further into the future, and say, what incipient problems around the world today can threaten us down the road? And what are we going to do today to keep those problems from metastasizing into existential threats? That's the point of statesmanship, to anticipate the problem, solve it when it's easily resolvable, and prevent the threat from becoming so serious that our very existence as a country is threatened. It's 7 years into the Obama presidency, and he still hasn't learned that lesson.
Last question, sir. In our last conversation, I asked you if you had settled on a presidential candidate for the Republican nomination. I won't ask you that again unless you want to volunteer that. But with the debate tonight and a few more debates coming up here and the first votes coming up, what do you want to hear most from GOP candidates that will give you confidence that you think they're looking at the world in the right way if they're elected president?
Well, you know, tonight's debate is mostly on economics, but I'd like to hear how the candidates understand the relationship between domestic policy and foreign policy. I really think they're two sides of the same coin. We cannot sustain the free and prosperous way of life we enjoy today in the United States and have since World War II unless we've got a strong American presence around the world to keep open the lines of trade and investment and communication and travel that have helped get us this standard of living. And by the same token, we cannot maintain the strong presence in the world unless we've got a vibrant, growing, free economy here at home, which we've not had since the crisis of 2008. So I think these two issues are closely interrelated. We're in a time where the pace and the scope of the threats we face grows every day. We read about terrorist attacks in Jakarta, Indonesia. Today we've had the seizure of the American crew, a North Korean nuclear test, the terrorist attack in San Bernardino. The crises are now coming very, very quickly, and the president we need to succeed Obama has got to stop the decline of American influence around the world and give us the stability we need to get the economy rolling again.
Mr. Ambassador, we'll leave it there. As always, sir, you're very good to give us your time. Appreciate it.
Glad to do it. Thanks again.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.